Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile. My guests in the studio today are connected to an incredible project and a film called Cast the First Stone, a documentary. And we're going to really spend a good part of the hour talking about that film today. But my guest, Jonathan Stack, who is one of the writers and director of this film, Jonathan is a multi-Emmy award-winning and two-time Academy Award nominated documentary filmmaker. A lot of people in this area, I've noticed since I talked about him coming on, are very familiar with a documentary he did called The Farm, and it looked at life inside Angola Prison, which you did win the 1998 Sundance Film Festival Grand Jury Prize for that. You also, that film was an Academy Award nominee of 1999 for the Best Documentary Feature. Jonathan's work has been distributed throughout 100 countries by networks including HBO, BBC, and Arts and Entertainment, A&E Channel, Channel 4, the Discovery Channel, and National Geographic Channel. Jonathan, I'm just fascinated to find out what goes on up in that brain. It's been interesting looking at all the work that you do. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And Allison Feaster, who I'm learning is, you know, you always need somebody to make sure that everything is in order and everything is in line and that things get done after the creation occurs. And that is Allison's part. I also didn't mention that Jonathan is also one of the co-founders of the Highest Common Denominator Media Group. And Allison is an associate producer on this film, but also is the part of Highest Common Denominator Group that keeps everything going.
Yes,
so, yeah, welcome, Allison.
Thank you.
And then finally, we have in the studio a woman who is very dear to my heart, Livonia Malvo, who is the judicial administrator for the Opelousas City Court. However, for those of you who know Livonia or those of you who don't, she's one of those people that every community is really blessed to have because she is involved in so many projects and programs that make everybody else's life a little bit better. So,
thank you, Cheryl. So
welcome.
Glad to be here with you.
And then we find out today in back in the KRVS studio what an incredible pianist you are.
Have studied since the age of 8.
Really?
So classically trained.
Wow.
Wow.
And so I'm going to just talk with you for a minute about that, Livonia. Did you pursue things with music at one time, or has it been just something for yourself?
Well, no, it's something that I've learned to I consider myself an accompanist, so I love to accompany extraordinary vocalists, instrumentalists, and it's what got me through high school and through college.
Ah.
And so it's a little bit of a little talent that I've been blessed with, and I just share it when God allows me to.
Yeah, and makes life just kind of go at ease and come together.
Yes.
Which is a lot with when we look at the arts and this film, Cast the First Stone. I had the privilege of seeing a screening of it this morning. Jonathan, if you wouldn't mind, because it's so, after seeing it, it's so many things. You know, it takes place at Angola Prison with inmates that are from Angola and also inmates that are from the Louisiana Women's Correctional Institute. So if you please tell us what this project was about.
Well, it's kind of a culmination of a many-year project, in fact. I've been there filming in Angola since 1996. I rolled up there to make a film about a man named Antonio James, who was about to be executed. And it was Warden Burl Cain's first execution that he was overseeing. And just in that 4 or 5 weeks that I spent around the prison, getting to know so many of the players, including Wilbert Rito, I just became obsessed by the fact that there was a bigger story to be told, not of a man who was leaving the prison, but of those men left behind living out their lives. And once I'd gotten that bug, which was fueled over the years just by the extraordinary people that I kept meeting and the access and the trust that I built with the prison itself.
Because that's not common.
No, it's not only not common, it doesn't exist anywhere else.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a prison that has allowed in the media quite as openly as Warden Cain has, and certainly no filmmaker has ever sort of dedicated as much time or as much of his career to telling that same kind of a story. And the story was always a very similar one, and it's one that I've been telling all around the world when I've traveled, which is go to some of the places that are considered the worst and keep finding the people, the best in people. Yeah. So I'm always looking for the best in people and the worst of places and celebrating that and giving power to it. Not because I have a naive sense that humans are good or bad, because I think we all have both qualities. It's just that I think we each have the choice and the power to pull out the best in people.
That's right.
And by focusing the stories on that quality of humans that is the most magnificent, then we give more power to it, as opposed to, as we know in the mainstream media, so much of the storytelling is focused on the negative. That all led to this many-year I kept coming back, making new stories, new films, and kept coming back, not every year, but every couple of years would find myself back at Angola, and found myself back there a few years ago when they were rehearsing the play, The Passion of Christ play, or what they call Life of Christ.
No, Mr. Tyler, Gary Tyler, who heads up the drama
yeah.
club at the prison, and he also is directing that production. Did you know him prior to this time when you talked about coming back?
You know, I think I met everybody
yeah.
in the prison, or I met many of the men who were there. And Gary's a long-termer, somebody I've known over the years, but we never had an occasion to work together. And as soon as I met Gary, I met him the very first day when I went to see the rehearsals, and I was blown away by the quality of the acting, the intensity of the performance. And then Gary himself is such a solid human being, such an interesting person, so evolved that I was quickly hooked into the idea that we should make a film that would follow the story of it, and immediately called up David Deniger, who's my partner at HCD Media Group, and said, let's do this. Let's just follow the story. There's something great is going to come out of it. So we just jumped right into it, which is unusual because normally I would have gotten funding and organized it
yeah.
and got it. But this is one of these things where it was happening in real time. And there were a few things that made it different from all the other stories. One was it was theater. So there were plays, and we could take the play and perform it throughout the prison so we could kind of dimensionalize the experience.
And so that came in – because that was one of my questions. That whole piece about – because when you watch the film, of course, the final production is taking place in one spot, but your film has them rehearsing in many different areas. That came about because of your filming.
Yeah, there was the play. The play takes place. In fact, you can go see it this weekend. Everybody
yeah.
should go see it. It's Saturday and Sunday. Again, they're doing The Life of Christ. It's up at Angola Prison at 10 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday. But we knew that for the filming purposes, it would be more dramatic if we would take the play and perform it in different locations throughout the prison. So that was something that we came up with early on. I have to give a shout out to Nicholas Cuellar, who's the co-director of the piece, who's a really brilliant young man. Over the years, I've had the blessing to bring down and to work with some really fantastic young talent, and he's part of that sort of history of people that I've been fortunate and blessed to work with. But he and I worked together with the prison to find locations that we thought would be appropriate. We chose pieces of the play. We didn't do the whole play out of the rodeo grounds, but we chose the ones we thought were most powerful, most indicative of the Christ's teachings.
Did the actors contribute to that part, to where we should film?
I don't recall that we had a lot of discussion, but we probably Gary did. But keep in mind, having filmed there for 16 or 17 years, I have a pretty good idea
yeah.
of what locations I thought would be the most appropriate and where I felt comfortable and thought it would, you know, give it the most widest visual look that we wanted to film. And we filmed in places I had never filmed before,
yeah.
old abandoned prisons and down in the Red Hat section. And so it was quite amazing from that perspective. And the other thing that was amazing was that the women inmates from St. Gabriel's prison down in St. Gabriel, Louisiana, were actually going to come up every day, and they were rehearsing towards the end. They were playing all the women roles, and that was really exciting because kind of an unintended experience was this sort of coming together of men and women, many of whom had not been in touch with each other in any connection, working together on something really positive. And I think it was quite – that's really gave it a special beauty to it.
Well, and very powerful in, you know – some of the things that really struck me as I was watching this was because you filmed in all those different parts, it was very interesting because the cast is really good. And you do forget – I know Lavonia and I were talking about that. You forget that these you didn't mix in you know, professional actors. And so you get lost in watching different pieces of it, but then you are pulled back to reality because of the regulations that have to be followed through at the prison. You know, I know Alison and I were talking about it, and she had mentioned, because the part that stuck out for me was, okay, it's time for headcount.
Yeah, well,
you know,
we wanted to keep getting that feeling of, you know, that never forgetting that you're inside a prison. But
exactly.
That also played well to the story of Christ, because Christ himself was somebody who would have circulated in this kind of a
That's
world.
Right.
And this is a very powerful place for these teachings. They resonate much deeper. And I've always said that what I loved about the movie was, not only do I think that by having told the story of incarceration through the message and teachings of Christ, you get a deeper understanding of what the experience of being incarcerated. But I think by telling the story of Christ through the lives of people who are prisoners, you get a deeper understanding of the relevance of the teachings of Christ.
Well, you know, it was interesting, two things, well, more than two, for the characters. But when you're talking about that, using that story, number one, the woman who played the Mother Mary, and what that experience was like for her getting in touch with and being able to kind of resolve some old feelings about not being able to be a mother, you know,
right.
to her kids. Mm-hmm. But also when they talked about nobody wanted to play the role of Judas.
Yeah. I think for me the most surprising takeaway from the film, and I think maybe this was for two reasons. One was that the character Lavelle – plays the role of Judas, and he's a fantastic actor. He's
mm-hmm.
probably I don't want to say it because there are a lot of talented people, but I thought he was the most talented actor, and he had the most powerful role, because to play the role of Christ is very difficult because Christ is perfect.
Sure.
So it's not as interesting a dynamic a character, but Judas is everybody. Judas stands for everybody, and I think that the understanding of Judas from the perspective of an inmate is really significant, because what you come to realize is, if there had been no Judas, there would be no Christ, right? So Judas is a critical character in this. He's not to be hated. He's there to be loved or to be given the chance for redemption. And he really understands it. This guy Lavelle, who plays he really gets it. And why he gets it so much, and I think why some of the acting is so powerful, not because they're such great actors, though a few of them I think are. It's mostly because they are their characters.
Mm-hmm.
They have been chosen somehow to play roles that they themselves have lived.
Yeah, they got it.
And part of it is that it took them 3 years of rehearsing to get to the place where they got to perform it, so they really were their characters.
So that was the time length process.
It was, but not because the year earlier there had been the flooding, so they had to cancel it, and the year before they didn't have the money. So they kept rehearsing it, and the people who stuck it out, who made it through to the end, who spent those years playing those roles and getting into those characters, had enough time to play the roles so that they became the roles, they became the characters, and they really understood it. Like the person who plays Peter, you know, he really grew into his role over the years. Now, we didn't film all of that, so I didn't see all that. But I surmise from the experience of why it is we are experiencing something that transcends their acting skills, that they are way beyond all that. And that's, I think, is the power of the film, because it really speaks to any of our potential, that any of us, if we dedicate ourselves to something that is greater than ourselves, with time and effort and conscious thought and collective energy and possibility, we rise up. We can rise up to something that we all have this possibility. And so the prison and the play stands for that possibility that all of us have. We all desire. We all experience our own divinity. We experience our potential. We know what's possible, and we don't quite live accordingly. We don't rise up to it. We're constantly, if we're seekers, we are seeking that sort of that revelation. And we try to find it any which way we can, and that's universal. That's not just a prisoner situation. The prisoners are a good mirror for us to choose. We can choose to just reject it and say, "Ugh, that's not me," or "Ugh, I don't like those people." Or we can choose it as an opportunity to grow for ourselves and say, "We want to go that far. We want to get to where we are now to anything is possible."
Yeah.
That idea that this is the story of change, that we all live with it. With the mindset that if we work together, that we have the collective power to create something magnificent. And I think that that's really what the play stands for. And that's what people are responding to, because it's more than just the story of, you know, like the story we all know, the story of Christ. It's like you're seeing it lived out in a way that we don't normally get to see.
And watching these people make these discoveries about who they are, whether it's who they deep down knew they were, or are just figuring out, wow, there's this part of me that I never knew existed.
Yeah, and you know? Earlier when you mentioned the woman that played Mother Mary, I feel like that is a huge part of what she came to realize during the film. Her name is Patricia, and she's been in prison for, I think, 9 years now.
She was one for embezzlement.
Yes, for identity theft and fraud, yes. Yeah. And her story that she told me when we hosted a screening at the LCIW was that her husband left and left her to raise the children. She didn't know what to do and just got caught in that cycle of things. And since she's been behind bars, her sons have not visited her more than twice at the time of the screening. And she pulled me aside and said, "You're a young woman. You have a whole future ahead of you. Please don't make the mistakes I did," and just really told me her story. And you could tell that it was something that she had been holding on to for a long time. And so, as Jonathan mentioned, that some of the characters grew, or some of the inmates grew into their character. She was someone that was always had that role inside of her and just had been holding on to all of this and just trying to put up a shield until she ended up playing this character. And
it was a healing process for
yes,
her.
It was, definitely. And just even she looks forward to the day that she is able to get out and is able to reconnect with her children. But until then, it gave her a little bit of a sense to where she could fill that void that has been missing in her life.
Yeah. And, you know, I always think, and I kept thinking it throughout this film too, is that, you know, and this is just my own personal belief, but in life, you know, and some of the people that talked about who they were, you know, we can all say that we would never do that or we would never do this. But, you know, until you're faced with a situation that you had no idea was going to happen in your life, you don't know really how you're going to – you know, you might say out loud, well, I would never. But
yeah.
You know what? You don't know until you're faced with that. And that's a lot of those folks that are incarcerated.
I know. That's a true story to the woman, Sandra Starr, who was in the film. And she talks about a little bit in there what happened with her. But she shot her boyfriend at the time. And she walked in the room and he was known for abusing her and their children. And she walked in the room and saw him abusing her child and shot him. And so as a mother and as a protector, when you see someone doing that with your child, there's no telling what could happen. And now she's in prison for life without parole.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm curious, were there talkbacks, you know, in some kind of form with the actors during this process with all of you?
Well, we had while we were filming?
Yeah, or just like a natural occurrence, happened
with
that.
Well, we're very interactive as filmmakers.
Okay.
And part of it is I've been there so many times and know all the people, many of them known for 10, 15 years. So they're people that I'm very comfortable with, and I've seen them grow and they've seen me grow. And we share information or share, you know, and filmmaking is the way I like to make films anyhow, is very interactive. It's a conversation, and you get involved with their lives and they get involved in your life in a way, even though obviously they don't come back to your home as we
sure.
go into theirs. But the thing is that I do remember, it was funny, you know, we work in film, and I had this moment where we came back to show a rough cut of the film or some part of the film, and the cast, just to the cast, we were showing them. And I remember the Bobby plays the role of Jesus Christ, and he stood up afterwards and he thanked us. And I remember him saying, and he wanted to thank us because he felt like the way we had treated him, he was – on behalf of all the actors, he said, you know, you really treated like human beings. You
yeah.
know, like we were treated like human beings. And I laughed because I was like, and I said, well, on behalf of our whole crew here, we'd like to thank you guys because we don't usually get treated so well either.
That's
you know,
right.
I can't
Isn't
tell
that
you,
true?
I can't tell you a film where I've shot where like the talent comes to offer you water or is, you know, they were so respectful and so
exactly.
grateful for our presence and having the chance for us to be there and to acknowledge the best part of who they are. And the hardest thing about Angola, you know, there are a lot of things that are difficult. I'm obviously missing your family and home, and all those things are very difficult. But one of the worst challenges you face is anonymity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're alone, and nobody really knows who you are, and
mm-hmm.
you're only a prisoner, and maybe you have a number, and you're sort of locked into a kind of a projected idea of what that means. And you desire, you imagine, you're not all that. You're not you're not the sum total of the worst thing you've ever done on the worst day of your life. Yeah. You're more than that. Time has changed you. You've grown. You're not even changed. You've just discovered parts of yourself that you never had a chance to discover. And nobody knows this, and nobody gets a chance to hear. So film, and the reason why I keep going back, has always been because I feel that because I've been given the opportunity to do so, I feel the responsibility to help get their stories out so people can hear and see them, and maybe they'll have a different idea. Maybe it will impact their life that will impact somebody else's life. Or maybe the individual whose story gets told is given a second chance because somebody out there says, you know what, maybe they're worthy of a second chance.
That's right.
And all those things are like little seeds. I don't have an illusion that film, you know, is going to change everybody's life. We're just planting seeds, and you know, and people like Livonia, they water the seed. They take it and turn it into their own story. And now the story is the story of our screening in Opelousas. And we don't know what will come out of that. We don't know what will plant in whose heart to decide to do what. And that's how it's spreading. And the key thing is, and I bring it up because of the film and the nature of the film. You know, the work that I've done has been fortunately been supported over the years by a lot of media. You know, it's been on television, it was on A&E, and it was on Discovery Channel, and it's been on all over the, you know, the world, and shown in films, and it was shown in film festivals, and we've been acknowledged and rewarded for it, and that's been beautiful. But the irony was that this film, which I think is the best film I made in terms of the quality of the craftsmanship and in many ways in the power of the story, is the worst received film from a commercial perspective. It didn't get a life. It landed like a lead balloon, boom, it was out the door and died, which is really strange to me. And I really couldn't understand this. And I've come to believe, and you know, I don't have anybody writes me letters to tell me why it's being rejected, but I've left with no other, no better, smarter than to say that it's because it's packaged within the story. It's the story of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And people have so much judgment within the mainstream media, which I think is so interesting because the film is called Cast the First Stone. So it's interesting that the media who's casting stones and they just cast it so bad. They don't see past it. I mean, the church and religion is guilty and responsible for lots of wrongdoing. There is no doubt. But this is not a film about religion. This is a film. If Gary Tyler, who's the director, is a spiritual man. He's not Christian. He doesn't call himself Christian. So you don't have to be Christian to appreciate the wisdom.
No, and you know what I loved? The gentleman, and I'm sorry, I'm forgetting his name, but who played Judas?
Yeah, Lavelle Tolliver.
Yeah, Lavelle. And he talked – one of his quotes, and he talked about that he's a Muslim.
Yeah.
And the quote he made about it was, the play is just the stories in the Bible.
Right.
But it's the actors who have all the power.
Right.
You know, and that was such a powerful statement to me about what this was about.
But what it depicts, though, yes, it's stories of the Bible, but it's the characters that give life to the mm-hmm. word and the gospel of Jesus Christ. Again, as you preface in your title, you know, it's the greatest story ever told. I wish, Jonathan, if you can give us a minute of the transformative power post-production. You guys talked about how the characters, the inmates took on the role of the characters they played. But what overwhelmed me and left me awestruck when I viewed it, Jonathan, was the outcomes.
Yeah. Well, we're in the middle of the outcomes. We don't know yet where it's going to go because it hasn't taken as quick a path as it might have if it had been embraced by the mainstream. But that, in a way, just makes a greater challenge and takes us further there. I think, you know, it's like nobody yet knows. I mean, you don't know yet. It's a little earlier. I've seen some of the films where you could see, wow, because of that film, somebody's life gets freed.
But I'm speaking more specifically about Bobby. He is now released.
Bobby is?
I thought someone. Saray was released?
Yeah, I didn't know Bobby was released. I'm not sure he's been released yet.
He's preparing for.
He's not released yet. He has a parole hearing
date. Okay,
it's coming up soon, and that's going to be, I'm
sure.
But
he's already licensed minister. That's the outcome I'm speaking about, at the individuals.
Well, that's not because of the play, because that's, you know, we are capturing the transformation that's happening in Angola mm-hmm. already. You know, there's a lot going on. The play is just a little window into what a lot of really positive things that are happening. And this just gets to another point, which is, you know, people say, why do you keep going back there? Why do I keep going back? And the reason I keep going back,
because I thought that.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
That was a question.
And I'll tell you why. And it's in the film. The amount of wisdom of people who are given no choice but to either give up on their lives and give up on the value of life, or are going to take the worst that life can give them, which they created their reality mm-hmm. around them, and turn it into something positive is so extraordinary that the quality of the conversations I have and the wisdom I have gained. And you see it in the film from beginning to end. You brought up a couple of the quotes. There are so many amazing quotes. I mean, what a blessing for me, because
right.
I'm a human being. It's like, where do I going to learn? I'm going to learn. I go to Angola to learn to be a better man. And I have learned that. I've learned the quality of friendship. I've learned the quality of honor, of trust. Of there's so many smart things that I've made me a better person. So why do I go back? Because my desire in life is to grow as a human being. And going to Angola has given me ample teaching moments.
And, you know, one of the – I mean, there's so many things that stood out for me. And I'm still processing. You know, just seeing it this morning, there's so many things I'm still going through. But there was a scene in there where – and I'm trying to think if it was just all the gentlemen or if a couple of the women – I think it was all the gentlemen were sitting in a circle. And they were processing and talking about what was going on. And the thought that kept going through my head, just having worked in mental health for years and being involved in groups and group therapy, and then just in business being involved in group discussion, it was one of the best discussions that I've had the opportunity to listen into, really, in a long time. And that was a powerful thing for me in that, you know, just what you're speaking to, Jonathan, is that when those folks – that's what they have, and it's what they make of it. And a lot of those people have made more than many of us are outside here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just wish that brilliance, you know, that's the role I've been playing. But how much better would it be if we could get those guys back out into the streets and doing positive things in the mm-hmm. community? How do we get that to
exactly.
happen? Because that's where we need them.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, the prison is a beautifully run place where people can rise up to their potential more than almost anywhere else I know. That's great. But we need that same
structure.
Having risen up. We need to get them back out into communities where they can be mentors and role models for young people to not end up like that. I mean, you don't have to go to prison to be able to find the value of yourself and the value of life itself. It doesn't need to go that far. So how can we get those guys and their teachings? And sure, we do it through the films, and that's a big part of what this is about. But we would like to do it through real living people, get them back out in the streets. You know, one of the things we hope with the film is that people watching it see how they challenges them to say, what can we do? What can we do to make a better society? What is our responsibility? So it's so easy to just sort of, you know, it's like they did bad and so they deserve behind bars. Well, how do we come deeper, go deeper and find ways to turn that into positive transformation in our own communities, whatever way that is? And we're reaching out through churches because we believe that those are the groups that already are they relate. It's their story, and they have the community, and they're committed to doing good things. So we hope that people listening to this, people coming to the screening tonight, they get behind it and figure, because the film is there as a tool to be used, and we are happy to show up if need be, but we don't even need to be there, because there's any one of you out there can be your own, you know, you be your own disciple and take this out there and you know, get it out there and use the film and become part of a movement, because we could change things here in Louisiana. It is crazy now that Louisiana has some of its laws are so written in that are based upon pain and suffering,
mm-hmm.
and I understand that, but it doesn't make things better. And how do we transform that pain and suffering? Where do we find the message to take us to that next higher level? And it's out there. I mean, it's all over. If it's in Angola prison, you know, in solitary confinement, it's certainly in your church and it's in your community and it's there and it's inside of you.
That's right.
And we just have to figure out how to channel that and sort of celebrate that and start working together to rise up to our collective potential.
That's right.
We're also reaching out to universities for their criminal justice departments to try to get their students involved or to require professors to make their students go to a screening or to host private screenings for all of their classes or something like that. Because I went to the University of Oklahoma and took some criminal justice classes there. And they do a really great job of telling you about the criminal justice system. But in my opinion, hasn't been a film that I've seen that it shows you the positive impact that prison also has on some of
That's
these people.
Right.
It just shows you how difficult it can be to be away from your family and to be under such strict watch and I guess the negative that can come from prison. But I think this film is really interesting in the fact that it does shine a light on, okay, if you are there for something that you did mess up on, or it's not the end of the world, and that there is something greater that can come from it, and you can leave as a changed person, and you can find new experiences and learn something new, even though this might be where you're at the given moment.
That's right. Well, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in just a minute. Okay, and we're back here with The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web at krvs.org. Please check out the website. As I always like to remind people, we have over 30 locally produced shows at this station as well as international and national shows. But a great place to check out news events coming up in the area. And also, if you'd like to be a supporter of what we do here at this station, it's a safe, secure website. So that's krvs.org. If you're just joining us, my guest in the studio connected to the documentary film Cast the First Stone, I have writer and director Jonathan Stack, the associate producer Allison Feaster, and Livonia Malvo, who is with is the judicial administrator for the Opelousas City Court, who was instrumental in bringing the film to the Delta Grand Theater in Opelousas. There were some screenings this morning already. And Livonia, I guess, you know, what was your feeling in wanting to bring this here, and what were you hoping to have as the outcomes?
In my capacity as judicial administrator, I'm also kind of serving as chair of our reentry coalition, St. Landry Parish Adult Reentry Coalition, that we formed 3 years ago, to be just what this film embodies, some type of support system for individuals transitioning, returning to their communities that have been incarcerated. When I received a personal invitation in August to view the screening held in Baton Rouge, I knew nothing of what I was going to see. did not expect the outcome. I was blown away. My only reaction was, we need to bring this to our local community, because I saw it as a mechanism, a tool wherewith we could engage our community, be it faith-based, businesses, partners, schools, the whole works, to see individuals in a positive light that, yes, you messed up, incarcerated, but you can change.
Yeah.
And if given the opportunity, as Jonathan has already said very eloquently, to rise to your potential, to discover yourselves. And it's unfortunate that some individuals have to go to prison to mm-hmm. find out who they are. But in my role as the judicial administrator, city court, we see a lot of individuals that come through the criminal justice system with so much potential, misguided, messed up, whether it be as a juvenile.
And didn't not have the opportunity to learn any of the skills
exactly.
they needed. You know, just were never given that.
And so then as an adult, they become, you know, offenders. And so it's like we talk about prison being a place of rehabilitation. But as you just said, they've never been habilitated.
Mm-hmm.
So our coalition, we're hoping that, again, we've been kind of functioning under the radar for the 3 years because we did not want to put ourselves too far out there. But building and forming our relationships with our business community, our education system, with our social service programs, with our churches, so that there can be a safety net to provide those services for individuals upon their return. So I commend Jonathan on his work and entrusting me and Opelousas and St. Landry Parish with getting the word out. We definitely want to make sure that this work go forth. It's no accident that Hollywood is closing doors or your film festival is saying no, because it's going to be unstoppable once the word and message gets out about this film. I see nothing but positive outcomes from it. Just to share, in Opelousas, we have one venue that we take great pride and joy in, and that is our historic Delta Grand Theater, where the screening tonight will take place. It only has 300 seats, occupants. Before I sent out our first press release and word was on the street already about this film, folk were calling for tickets. We have been out of seats for about 2 weeks now.
Yeah, and I do want to encourage, because that is kind of
a good response from the community.
It is a good response. But for those of you listening who wanted to see it tonight, because it is sold out, what I would encourage you to do, because we would like to see it also brought to other areas throughout Acadiana, but you can go to the website, which is castthefirststone-themovie.com, and things will be listed on there in terms of upcoming showings, upcoming events connected to that. But that's a good thing to have happen.
Definitely, it is. It's a beautiful problem.
You know, Jonathan, it would be interesting too. You know, I don't know if you're keeping track of what, and I guess, Allison, this would also be for you, but what have been some of the most, where people have kind of the most powerful reaction? Mine today, through that whole movie, I had the most powerful emotional reaction to the time when, towards the end of the film, and they were actually doing the theatrical production. And it was the part where all of the cast members, they had their family members and friends sitting in the audience at the rodeo arena there. And they ran up to those people when it got to the part of sharing the bread. And that was such a power. And, you know, when that struck me and it caught me by surprise, but then when I thought it through, that reaction for me was being able to see these people, and I don't know what life is like there for them. I'm not there, but the feeling I had was, wow, this has got to be an interaction that they don't normally get to have with their friends and relatives. Mm-hmm. That running, that exhilaration, right. And
there was a lot. I mean, it's funny you say that, because there was this. At one point, it was the sense of freedom that they had, particularly during the making of the film.
Exactly.
Because they were like our movie stars, and we were moving them around, and the prison was completely accommodating, as they always are, to try to get as powerful a story told as possible. But I think one thing that, you know, one of the scenes that, you know, that in the opening of the film, when they're doing the John the Baptist, the baptism scene on the water, these are people had not touched water, you know, except a shower in years and years and years to actually
right.
put their feet into the water. And one of the women said that when nobody was looking, she went over just to touch the water because she was, her role didn't take her into the water, but she wanted to touch water because she hadn't seen like a body of water like
that's
this.
Right.
And that was a really powerful thing. The beautiful part of the men, the women talking about what is it like to hear men's voices, which they had not
because,
been
boy, you don't
like
think
that.
About that.
You know, things like just being in that kind of positive, you know, we were talking before about how many of the women themselves came from abusive homes mm-hmm. or marriage or children, childhood, and for them to be in this very positive relationship with men working together to make something beautiful was really powerful. I'll tell you quite a beautiful story, which was not the case with this piece, because part of the thing was everybody who was in the play, they were allowed to be in the play because they were already inmates who had achieved a certain status of trust
sure.
with the prison system. But when I did the first film and we were did The Farm and I showed the film, we had a premiere of the movie, and there was a young man named George Crawford. He had just been in prison a year. We followed him from his first day in Angola. And there was a moment we did the screening, and I went up to him afterwards. He was sitting in the theater at the prison the auditorium they had, which was the visiting room at that point. And he was kind of quiet afterwards. So I went up to him. I said, well, what did you think? What was it like to see yourself in a movie? And he said, well, I feel good and I don't feel so good. And I said, well, what do you feel good about? He said, well, I kept looking up at that person, me, you know, seeing myself in the film. And I kept thinking, man, he's a good guy. He's a really good guy. Like, he's smart. I'm caring. And I was like, and that was the good thing. And I said, well, what was the bad thing? Well, all I kept thinking was, if I could have been the person I was in that movie when I was out on the street, I wouldn't have ended up here in the first place.
Yeah.
And so it sort of shows, it was so interesting that we see reflected through film the part of ourselves, whatever that is. You know, it's like you watch reality TV and people are acting like idiots mm-hmm. because that's what sells and that's what the producers want. And then you make a documentary where you're saying, you know what, I know you've done horrible things. That's why you're here. We're not judging that. What we'd like to do is to see that part of you that's the smartest, the kindest, the most generous, the most wisest. Now, I don't care how old you are, what you've done, but just reveal that to us in the process of making this film. And then see yourself seen as that quality of yourself, which is true. And both of those things are true. The one that committed the crime that got you there and the one that acted that came out in the film to be wise and kind and generous. And that's what filmmaking can do. It's like we have the power to do that. And we all have the power if we live our lives with that commitment to say we're going to promote, we're going to support, we're going to embrace those qualities that we find to be of the highest value. So when you go into church on Sunday and you're hearing all that wisdom, you know, apply it.
Mm-hmm.
Apply it to the people around you. You know that everyone has the capacity to do though to be godly-like. And also, most of us have the capacity to be not godly. You were asking before how we end up in here, you know, how you could end up in Angola. I've met people in Angola who drank too much, got into a had an accident and killed somebody, and they're serving a life sentence for vehicular manslaughter because it was, you know, another time. I met a kid who was involved with dealing drugs on such a small level, but it had been a multiple offender. So he was in serving a life sentence. You know, most of us have done things that are illegal, that are wrong, you know, that don't fit within the right, you know, but we didn't end up in Angola. That's great. We're fortunate. We didn't go too far.
Yeah.
But we've all done things that could have gotten us into that direction. And once you go down that path, depending on where you come from and who you are, it's amazing how it can suck you right in. And if you don't have that support, and hopefully this film, working with Livonia, speaking here on the radio, we start to celebrate a new way of interacting that promotes the highest quality,
yeah.
which is the word. That's how we came up with the highest common denominator. It was based on this idea. Can we rise up to our high? How do we find unity on our highest level, not on our lowest level?
Yeah. And, you know, another part that what you're talking about, and I think it was a gentleman maybe that played Peter. I'm not – but anyways, what he spoke to was how the other inmates were reacting to the, and made a comment where, you know, there are some that –
Yeah, that was Bobby.
Was that Bobby?
Yeah,
talking
it was Bobby
about
playing
that?
Yeah, the guy who plays the role of Jesus.
Okay, but that was an interesting, you know. And he said, yeah, and some of them they just think, and that was fine, and that's okay if that's what they think. Yeah. Great, but you know, then we also had the support. But I really appreciated him being able to address the fact that, you know, there's some folks that live there that, hey, what a waste of time this is, but that's theirs to think.
I mean, I think
that's fine.
Look, if you were to ask me honestly, how many people have reached a point where I could safely say you could come stay at my house and live with me? I don't think it's the majority of people. Mm-hmm. I do think that there's different levels. There are a lot of people who've just given up. You mm-hmm. know, they maybe gave up before they even got there.
That's right.
You know, but you know, I'm not worried about everybody. You know, I'm just worried about the ones who present themselves and are ready to make those changes. That's why when you're asking who ends up, somebody was saying, how do you choose the characters who end up in your film? You know, a lot of it is it's who presents themselves, who shows up. You know, yeah. Who shows up with that positive energy? Who shows up wanting to participate in the story? And most guys don't. They stay to the side. I might have seen them on the hallway in the prison. But there's always that few who come up who just want to seize every opportunity to express something positive. And those are the ones that you want to work with.
Yeah.
And that's not just true in prison. That's true in life itself.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, who shows up at your work employment who you just know, this guy or this girl, she's got it. These are the ones who you want to give the energy to, because they're the ones who will honor your effort the most.
That's right. Go ahead.
One of the things, kind of what you were going back to talk about, it, the interaction and relationship between the inmates, the male and female, it was really interesting because one of the things in the film, it shows how at one of their first meetings and rehearsals, how it was kind of like a sixth grade dance. All the guys were on one side all the women were on one side. And it was very hard to get them to interact together. But not only between men and women, we kind of talked about it when I went to the LCIW for our first screening, but even just the women on women interaction, because they walk through the hallways and through the prison and they're not allowed to touch at all. And so for them to have to not only interact with people of the same sex who they see all the time, but for some of the inmates to have to hold the body of Jesus of a male, they don't even get to touch other people. And so at the end of the film,
that vulnerability.
Exactly.
That you know?
Yeah. And at the end of the film, you can see when they're celebrating the play being done with, that they're like hugging each other and so excited and telling like the other male inmates goodbye. And then when we went to when we had the screening there in March, we did photography of all of the women inmates and they did a group photo. And it was so funny because they went right back to their ways of being in prison. If we had to tell them, put your arms around each other, like act like you were this family that you were. And like, okay, but we're back here and it's not accepted.
And
but
that's what we know. Yeah.
And that's what they know. But for that brief glimpse, they got to experience reality again, which just – you could tell completely rejuvenated their soul of even just human interaction and human touch, just the simple things that we take for granted. And you could just see their souls light up with that kind of stuff.
Do you know, when you were spending time there, does the Women's Correctional Facility, do they have a drama program there? They do, right?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Well, the drama program exists, but it – you know, through this has really been its most energized. You know, one of the things that people, you know, in part because of Warden Kane himself and part because we live in a sexist society, but there have been a lot more resources and more opportunities for male prisoners. And, of course, there are more of them. And recently more and more efforts being made to assure that the women themselves get more opportunities. And the women are serving usually shorter sentences.
Shorter.
And so they need to go – they're going back out and they need certainly – the people who are going back out into society, you want to make sure that they're going back out with the skill sets and the mindset that allows them to avoid doing the things that get them back to the prison. Because if nothing else, if you just don't like these people for whatever reasons you don't like, just think about the cost of it, because it's so expensive to incarcerate that the money that you spend – keeping people behind bars could be so better spent building better schools, building better roads, building a better Louisiana and a better nation, and instead of the punishment game and that just that endless thing when it's just we can't afford it. I mean, there was ever a time when you could afford it. Those days are long gone.
That's right.
What the economy is like and the expenses. It's tragic when you think it's going to cost as much money to keep a person behind bars as it is to send them to Harvard University. You know,
That's
it's just
right.
like these things are just like so skewered. It's like, what do we want? you know, better kept prisoners, or we want to have better prepared, you know, citizens.
Yeah. And, you know, I know we're getting close to the end here, so I really do want to talk about, too, and Allison, this is, I know, part of what your, you know, your job is also, but when you have a challenge in getting the word out, you know, about a film like this, when you run into some of those brick walls, you know, my thought, too, it's going to be one of those word of mouth.
It really
is strongly on word of mouth, social media.
It's a grassroots movement.
It is. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do you have to do in terms of, you know, your role taking a look at a film like this? You know, what are you doing in terms of being creative to, gosh, how are we going to?
Yeah, well, luckily, due to Jonathan and David Deniger's relationship at Angola and throughout Louisiana over time, this has been the home of the film and kind of our starting point just through the connections that we have here and with the prison. But we've also been showing – we've done very few small showings of some of David's friends in the Northeast. And so they have reached out to me via our website and got in contact and put me in contact with their church ministers. And they are interested in doing a couple of screenings in Connecticut and things like that. And so originally, our main focus was doing festivals. That when that failed, then plan B was starting back in Louisiana and reaching out to people that are near and dear to our hearts and that have been supporting us for years, and then just kind of see where that goes. And then the churches. And the most recent one was the idea of reaching out to criminal justice classes. And so I feel like now that we're on a kind of a path of a general path of how we're going to do this, more and more ideas are coming, and we are definitely open to taking ideas and just seeing what – the thing that we enjoy the most is people reaching out to us and saying, this is how I can see this film being used in my area.
Very nice.
Can you help us bring it there? Because
yeah.
we don't have a strict model. We're willing to bend and mold because, as you say, the film can be applied to so many different areas, which is great. But also when you're trying to come up with a plan, it can be a little bit difficult, which is why we're just saying, how can you use the film? We would love to be there and support you in any way possible and to make something happen for your community, your church, your school, your friends, your family, anything like that. So,
yeah, and you know what I thought of too is just classes on whether it's groups out in the community or university classes, but on teaching social interaction skills.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's something that's so powerful in that film and these people needing, you know, really talking about what things feel like for them, what the experiences are like for them. I mean, it's a great tool. It's a mm-hmm. great educational tool, this
and
film.
And, Cheryl,
is.
I just want to even add to the general public, those of you who are listening to this interview and you have been – your interests have been piqued with this conversation here. I'm a testimony of their openness in responding.
Yeah.
After my screening in August that I saw in Baton Rouge, I just shot an email, took a chance, responded to their email on their website. Allison responded, and we have not only her from Dallas area, but Jonathan flew in all the way from New York to come to Opelousas for a screening. So that speaks to their willingness to embrace and partner and get this powerful work out.
Yeah, and so that's the best way for people to contact you, Allison, is through the website.
Yeah, on the website, either our HCD Media Group website, Cast the First Stone website.
Can you give the address for the HCD Media
website? Yeah, hcdmediagroup.com is for the company that produces the Farm 10 Down, Road to Redemption, and now Cast the First Stone. So quite a bit of work at Angola. And then Cast the First Stone is castthefirststone-themovie.com. And on both of those websites, there's a contact us page, and you just fill out generic information with a little message, and it's just sent to my email directly, and I get back to you via phone or email or whatever's best for the person with what information they leave me.
Yeah. You have, Jonathan, other projects that you're working on right now currently?
Of course. Always have to be. It's just the nature of it. Spending a lot of time in Haiti.
I just
came back from Haiti a week and a half ago. I've been going to Haiti regularly for the last since before the earthquake. I work at a film school there that we teach young Haitians to become filmmakers, and we created a production company made up of the graduates, and we go out and we work and we produce content, and now we're producing a piece about the Citadel, which is one of the most extraordinary monuments to the fight against slavery ever, I think anywhere in the world for sure. And you know, I'm learning as I go about what an amazing history that place is, and as chance would have it, we were talking before, the link between Haiti and Louisiana and the strong links of it. I don't think people realize now, because of Haiti's reputation as, you know, a failed state and, you know, the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, that at one point it was one of the richest places in the world and was the richest colony. It was richer, it created more wealth than all the 13 colonies combined. It was that rich. And the food that kept it going and that slave machine going mostly came out of Louisiana. And that was interesting because everything they were growing there was sugar for sugar cane and for rum. So, you know, quite an amazing history. So, you know, that keeps me going. But I keep looking for powerful things that I can be part of to tell stories and be of service and learn and travel the world.
Yeah, the best way for people to find out more about you, and the Internet Movie Database is always a good place to go, but your highest common denominator.
Yeah, no, I don't always know. I'm not myself. I'm not quite sure anybody could figure out what I'm doing. It's just sort of, it happens in a very organic way, but when it happens, people will know about it. If successful, if not, then I probably didn't do a very good job. You just never know where I'll pop up next. But I have to say that of all the places that I like to keep popping up in, Louisiana is one of them. And it's because it's a really fantastic part of America. I think it's a beautiful group of people. The culture is amazing. And people are kind and open. And there's so many great things that we have to, we don't want to just like leave thinking, oh, this is just, you know, a prison state. It's not at all. You know, there's a magic to Louisiana, and we've all eaten it or drank it or played it or partied it or enjoyed it in so many ways, and we're deeply grateful to it. And, you know, I hope New Orleans Saints don't win the Super Bowl again. Any other team besides the New York Giants,
your ratings just dropped.
If any other team besides the Giants, let it be the Saints.
I'm a Packer fan, so we don't even want to go.
We don't even want to bring up.
But
the
we
Cowboys.
Love LSU.
No, I wasn't going to say anything about the Cowboys. No. So.
And we must say, who dat?
All right. Well, if anybody listening out there, too, we'd like to see, if this film would be shown in other areas throughout Acadiana, please go to the website, which is castthefirststone-themovie.com. And, you know, let Allison know that you're interested in bringing the film in, or if you have any other ideas of how that film can be used, that's the best place to contact her. Jonathan Stack, Allison Feaster, and Livonia Malvo, thank you so much for coming on today. We really appreciate it.
Could I just say one last thing? I just wanted to once again reiterate that the play Life of Christ is this Sunday. And I acknowledge that even though it's a drag that there are that many people serving that long sentences, the fact is, you know, many thanks to Warden Kane for letting us make these films, and for Warden Kathy Fontenot for making this whole thing, this Life of Christ play, which made the film possible. So we're deeply grateful for the work they do up there. It's pretty amazing. No other place in the country does
it. That's right. And so the theater production this Saturday and Sunday at Angola Prison, 10 a.m. both days, $10 for the tickets. And go to angolamuseum.org. Have a good week, everybody.
Thank you.